If you go through the lost chapters of the big book, the ones that nobody ever reads, to wives, family afterwards, a vision for you, to employers, there's a lot of instructions on how we're supposed to operate out in the world. All right? It's on page 19. It says, it's really for the spouse. I kind of took it out of context. It says, undoubtedly we should admit our faults. Each spouse should pray, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind, and it may be the way of good sense to let bygones be bygones. We're talking about infidelity. We're given instructions how to handle every kind of a man that comes down the pipe. There's plenty we should do at home, but we are yet a long way from making good. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. We must take the lead, so we clean house with the family. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry will not fit the bill. Sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past, being very careful not to criticize them. One of the things we didn't cover was the rules in AA. And I'll just mention it to you. On 74:1 is the fifth step rule, and it says, the rule is we must be hard on ourselves and always considerate of others. That does not sound like a selfish, oh, well, if I make that amend, I'll be hurt. Wrong. Hard on yourself, considerate of others. You are not others when it comes to making amends. God will keep you safe and protected, you know. Ask each morning, number five, ask each morning in meditation that God show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. That is a nine-step prayer that we're supposed to do every day for our family. I've talked to people for years and they never even heard of a nine-step prayer. Didn't know it existed. We're supposed to ask it on a daily basis. There it is, you know. Number 10, let's try to repair the damage immediately, lest to pay the penalty with the spree. Don't let this stuff, I think the Bible says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Clean your slate on a daily basis. That's why 10 and 11 are so important. Morning prayer, clean it up during the day. Evening review, clean it up the next morning at the latest. Get this stuff off your plate because it has something to do whether you're going to drink again. You know? Number 11, let's let no alcoholic say he can't recover unless he has his family back. This is not, just is not so. 12, remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent on people. That means the sponsor. His recovery is not dependent on you as the sponsor. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Do not elevate yourself as a sponsor to think that you, this guy is depending on you, he cannot stay sober without you. If I start to feel that way, I immediately kick the guy to somebody else and say, okay, go do your fifth step with Chris. Go do your fifth step with Pete. Go do your fifth step with Joe or Mike. You know, I just kicked the guy to Mike the other day. Go do your fifth step with him. If somebody comes to me, I had a guy, that's why I kicked the guy. The guy came up to me and he says, I'm done with my fourth step. I want you to hear my fifth step, but I want you to hear it now. And I don't want anybody else to be there. I said, excuse me? We don't care what you want. You know, my sponsor used to make, when I first started in AA, he made me write on the mirror where I would see it every day, what I want does not matter. Once I took the third step, I have a new director, right? So what I want doesn't matter. To this day, it's on the dashboard of my car, right next to the speedometer, because I don't want to get my car airborne, do I? It's on the screensaver of my computer. You know, what I want does not matter. I put it everywhere where I'll see it all the time. I immediately looked at this guy and said, okay, A, I am not going to hear your fifth step because you want me to hear your fifth step. B, you will hear your fifth step with somebody else because you don't want to hear your fifth step with anybody else. And I would highly suggest you go talk to him. And you know what? The guy realized that his life depended on it, and he went over and said, hey, would you hear some inventory with me? You know, da-da-da-da-da-da. You know? We cannot direct how this program works. We can't say, I want to do A, B, C, D. We'll buy. That's our ego talking. I don't know how I got off on that, but anyway, I'm not going to take the time to go through all these. Read these suckers. There's powerful, powerful, powerful amends with the family. Most of us fall way, way, way below par in the family arena. I mean, like I said, there's 22 for us to go out and make amends to the people like that we don't even know, really. You know, our bosses, our co-workers, you know. And there's, what, 47 of them? Look at number 47, by the way. We have three little models which are apropos. Here they are. First things first, live and let live, and easy does it. Three of the mottos, the early mottos that came from AA, come in family afterwards. We need to be doing our work at home. It's the one place AA's failed miserably. We'll be great sponsors. We'll be great 12-steppers. We'll be great employees. And we're killing our family. Remember the motto of my group, my men's group? You think you're working this program, show us your family and we'll tell you whether you're working this program. Bring the stuff home. I can't emphasize that enough. Most of the AA's I know do not have a happy home life because they're not working principles at home. Pray with your families. Let your guard down. They're your loved ones. They're your best friends. They should be your number one supporter. If you've forgiven them, they will forgive you. If you've cleaned up the past and made amends, they will make amends with you, and you will be bound together the way you're supposed to be. Bring it home. Don't make this your family. This is your other family. You have a family of chance and a family of choice. Your family of chance is the family you're born into. Your family of choice is your AA, because you're choosing AA. You're coming here because you want to be here. Do not forget about your family of chance. They may be spiritually sick, but who made them spiritually sick? Chances are it was your disease. Clean up the past at home. Get that stuff done, you know. Now Chris is going to take us into the step 12.
All right. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. I love the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, all right, if you get up to the point where you've completed the steps up to and through step 11, you are going to have no choice but to have an awakened spirit. And really the next logical thing is to carry that message to still suffering alcoholics. It would be a crime not to. And what message are you going to carry? Dave and I made a deal about a year and a half ago. We got together and we made a deal. It was like New Year's. And our resolution was we're going to tell the truth in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings about the spiritual awakening, about the 12 steps. We are going to carry this message. We're not going to carry our message, we're going to carry this message. And we started to do it. And there were times when it didn't make us the most popular people in the world. But I'll tell you what, I truly try to do that today.
It was really a two-pronged deal. The deal was that Chris and I had been trying to get the old-timers, you know, the don't drink, go to meeting guys, to come over and stop killing people. Because we'd be watching their sponsees going out, literally going out and dying. And then nobody knew how to 12-step, and so they were coming back, and they ended up as our sponsees, because nobody else would 12-step them back into AA if they lived. We made a deal that we'd leave the old-timers alone. That's not our business. They're serving a purpose, you know, it was our spiritual arrogance. But we made a deal that we're going to start carrying this message into the rooms, and we're going to grab every single newcomer we could find so that they had a chance, an opportunity at finding AA. They didn't have to sit in AA for 5 or 10 years and get really pissed off when they found out it wasn't just don't drink and go to meetings. And we created an entire crop of newcomers who in 3 months sober, they're making amends and they're sharing about it in meetings. You know, in the last month, I've had guys with over 20 years, a guy with 18 years, a guy with 13 years, pull me aside and say, Dave, I've never been through the steps. Please don't tell anybody, but would you take me through the steps? They're finally starting to see that there's something else, and they're now attracted to it. You know, trying to beat them with it is not the way to do it. I made that mistake. I opened up the March Grapevine and read an article in the March Grapevine that was written about me, specifically.
It's right over there, if you want to read.
It's a very embarrassing thing. I had taken a group of guys through the 12 steps in a work group, and I did not warn them. I had shown them some truth, and what did they do? They immediately went out into AA meetings and started attacking the old-timers like it was sport to give them resentments. You know, look what you're not doing, you know, and slam them. And they were wearing the resentments like a medal, and it's entitled Wearing Resentments Like a Medal. I was unbelievably wrong. The guys didn't hear the message. I presented it wrong. Somehow, your eyes kind of glaze over. We're throwing so much material at you. That's why the guide is so long. Buy the tapes. Take this guide, take it slowly, and do it for yourself. None of this should be misconstrued as a weapon to go out and shove in people's faces and say, we need each other. Now, whether they're two-steppers, 12-steppers, you know, the one area that I do draw the line at is 13-stepping, you know, because that yeah. kills people, you know. There's so much stuff going around these days, you know, hepatitis C and AIDS and stuff. That's literally killing people and matter of fact, my friend Joe, his dad had died with, I don't know, 43 years of sobriety or something. He threatened me when my third meeting. He said, kid, if I even see you look at a woman, I will kick your, you know, and I never looked at the women at his meeting. I stopped going to his meeting, you know. He was trying to protect the women, you know, from me, because he knew. One look at me, he knew what I was up to, you know. So I do say something. I overstep my bounds sometimes with 13-stepping and say, hey, you know, I met, but I do it to the sponsors. I go to the sponsors and say, do you realize that your sponsee is having sex with somebody and that the person you're having sex with has hepatitis C? Because they've shared it at an open AA meeting that they've got hep C, you know, and let the sponsor deal with it as a spiritual thing. And I do it in private. I don't do it publicly, you know, these days. But I always do it with God in mind. I ask God to show me how to deal with this because I don't want to see people die, you know. But whatever you do, don't use this stuff as a weapon, because we're going to keep, we're giving you tools here that can very easily be used as a weapon to hurt as well as to help.
It's very, very easy to get the attitude like, now I truly understand. I'm going to tell everybody. And
I know the real program, the real AA.
And it, you know, it's very, very easy to get caught up in the evangelicalism of the whole thing, you know.
And until you have experience, all you have is knowledge. Go have your experience first, and then start to share the stuff by your action.
Absolutely, you're gonna approach everything a lot differently with the awakened spirit than you would, you know, just armed with some facts about yourself. Absolutely true. You know, the carrying the message. So when I first got sober, you know what a 12-step call was? Throw them in the back of the car and take them to Happy Hills. I mean, that was the extent of a 12-step call.
And then when insurance ran out, it was driving to the hospital in front of the emergency room and kicking out with the instruction that you don't have any insurance, but they have to treat you. And they'll put you in the flight deck for a day, and then they'll send you down to detox, you know.
That's not really...
That's not 12-step.
That's not really taking our responsibility seriously. It interferes with our family life a lot. But there's been periods in the last year where I have literally detoxed people in my house. I don't recommend this because of alcohol withdrawal. You can die. It's a very dangerous thing. But in certain situations, having somebody over at my house so that I can actually 12-step them has seemed like the best thing to do, and we have done that. I believe that you carry the message of this process to an alcoholic. You do not send them off to Happy Hills where they'll have to unlearn half the stuff that they get taught there. You know what I mean? One of the scariest things that happened to me lately is when I was in the middle of the talk I was talking about earlier with the counselors in training. A lot of the things I talked about, they were really unfamiliar with, like the 12-step process. I think that a lot of the things that you learn in rehab can sometimes go counter to the AA process itself. I know this because I've been involved in carrying the message into many institutions in my area. I've been the treatment facilities chair. I've done a lot of work with institutions. And I'm not a huge fan of them, really, in a lot of ways. I know that they're our friends, and we have to be friendly with them. I know that they still serve a very, very important purpose. But there are things that I disagree with. And I think it's a crime to, instead of carrying the message to the still suffering alcoholic, to send them off to the professionals and have the professionals do it when it's not absolutely necessary. You know, we're all fine and well in our homes, and everything's going fine, and we run off to the AA meeting for an hour, and we just really don't want to get involved with this wet drunk. Well, I'll tell you what, it's our responsibility sometimes to get involved with the wet drunk. And Dave and I sometimes get a lot of crap from our spouses about it because it does interfere with our family life, and sometimes we do go overboard, but I'll tell you, we do take this thing seriously.
Look at page 21 of the guide. The group that I got sober in was founded by Bill Wilson. It's out in New Jersey. And they did not close with the Lord's Prayer. They closed with this. It's, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there. And for that, I am responsible. You know? It was powerful. I learned about carrying the message from day one in AA. And it saved my life. They did not take a long time. You know, Bill D, Alcoholic Number 3, was out making 12-step calls almost immediately. All of the early guys, they did it. You know, I use the expression to the guys that I sponsor, that are my sponsors. I say, as long as you're one page ahead of them in the big book, you have an experience to carry. Mm-hmm. Don't carry anything you don't have, but if you've got something, you're obliged to carry it. It's part of, we're charged in the 12-step to carry this message. to others, not just alcoholics. If you walk into a situation and he doesn't want to get sober, 12-step his wife. I have great Al-Anon contacts. I'm married to one. But before I was married to one, I still had Al-Anon contacts. I know how to get in touch with people who can help the family. And you got another 12-step call right there. You know? So don't let somebody die just because you're too busy. You know? Oh, you know, Allie McBeal is on tonight and I haven't seen this one. I'd really like, you know, here's five guys. Call these five guys. Maybe one of them can help you. You know? That's not what it's about.
With the process of the insurance companies who really just aren't playing ball anymore, and, you know, sometimes you can't blame them. I mean, with the amount of people that relapse, I sponsor a guy who's been through about 20 rehabs. I tell him when he wants to go into a rehab, he doesn't deserve to go into a rehab. He's taking a bed away from somebody who's serious. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I can understand why the insurance companies are not playing ball anymore. I'll tell you what, there's a lot of things we have to relearn. I carry alcohol in the car with me when I go on a 12-step call. Dave and I have enough experience that we carry plastic bags so that they don't puke on our Corinthian leather. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of things we learn.
Go to page 23 of the guide. Everybody take a look at the bottom there. There's four things. What to bring with on a 12-step call. I've had more people ask me for this, and I really wanted to point it out. You know, we're not probably not going to have time to go through all these things on a 12-step call. First of all, ask God to direct your actions. It's His 12-step call. Remember, you got your power from Him. Do not arrogantly think, I'm going to go sober up this guy. That, you don't get to decide who wins, who lives, and who dies. That's His call. All right? Always bring another person. We always go in pairs. I was listening to a tape from an old-timer a couple years ago. He's talking about being down in the intergroup office, and a guy calls from a hotel and says, I need help. He says, great. As soon as somebody else comes in the office, I'll be right down. He knows to go in pairs. The guy calls back about 20 minutes later and says, you said you were coming. Come on down here. And he goes, well, I don't have any time, more time to wait. So he goes down there by himself. He walks in. The guy is sitting on the bed with a bottle of whiskey, and on this night table is a loaded 38. And now he's in the room. What's he going to do? The guy's already mad that it took him 20 minutes to get there. You know, there's the 12-stepper. That's the person that's going to do the pitch. And there's what I call the safety. He's the other guy that would, while you're talking to the drunk, you encourage him to take another swig off the bottle while the other guy would walk around and pick the 38 off the table and unload it. You know, you do not be surprised. In Bill Wilson's day, handguns weren't that prevalent as they are today. It's very common to walk into places and find guys with guns, loaded guns, and they're drunk out of their gourd. You know?
It can be a scary situation. I've had my life threatened on two occasions by maniacal drunks. I got a call from this one guy one time. It was about midnight, and he said Satan was talking to him, you know? Like, Satan is telling me to hurt people. I'm like, how much coke did you do tonight, buddy? He's like chirping like a squirrel. So I go, hang on a minute. I'll be over. And I got one of my friends, and I'm driving the car. The safety is in the passenger seat, and he's in the back seat, and we're driving him off to the hospital because this guy, you know, we're not taking this guy to the basement. And I asked him, I go, how you doing back there? And he goes, Satan's still talking to me. He's telling me to kill people, especially people that are trying to help me. You know, I'm looking in the rearview mirror like this, and I'm going, whoa. They put this poor guy in Marlboro Hospital for about a year and a half. I'm telling you, he's one of the casualties.
That's the flight deck, if you don't know.
Another thing that I learned not too long ago, and I will never, ever forget this, was I was taking another guy off the detox because he was starting to get DTs, and I was in the back of the car, and there were two people in the front, and I put my seatbelt on for some reason. Usually when I'm in the back of a car, I never put a seatbelt on. But we're driving down the highway, and he gets the idea, the drunk person gets the idea that he wants to get out. He wants to get out of the car. We're doing like 65 miles an hour. He opens up the door, starts to step out. I lunge over, I grab him by the belt, and I'm able to pull him back in the car. If I didn't have my seatbelt on, it would have either been him and me, or just him going out of the car. And I'll tell you what, it would have just been him. But luckily, I had my seatbelt on.
The lesson learned is whoever's in the drunk's in the back, and he usually is, put somebody back there with him. That's what the safety's for, you know?
Absolutely. But, I mean, we've had a lot of experiences like this. And a lot of times, 12-step calls are like relationships. I mean, you're going to learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely.
It's very, very hard to cover every possible scenario that could happen, you know. You have to do a lot of prayer work. You have to get God involved. You have to go in there with God. And it really helps to have an awakened spirit and to be at that point where you can intuitively handle situations that used to baffle you. Because there are going to be some situations that could baffle you in a 12-step call.
I guarantee you it'll explode in your face if you don't have God on your side.
So one of the real important things is to have been through the steps to be able to 12-step somebody. I mean, if you're just driving somebody to the hospital, it doesn't really matter if you've had a spiritual awakening. But if you're trying to carry the message to somebody, it's good to have it to carry.
And that explains item C on this page. Be prepared for anything. And we mean that literally. Be prepared for anything. I had a guy call me up, and what I didn't realize is his wife is standing over him saying, "You're going to call this guy or I'm going to hit you." You know? So he calls me up, "Yeah, I want help." So I show up over there, and as soon as I show up, now the wife is really, really irate, and she's out of her mind. You know? And now I'm not afraid from the drunk. I'm scared to death that the wife's going to go off, you know. And finally I got her talking to going downstairs and watching TV because the Oscars were on. I'm like, "Would you do me a huge favor? I really need your help to 12-step your husband. I've got to have your help. Nobody in this house can help me except you. Would you go downstairs and watch the Oscars for me?" She's like, "Well, that'll get him sober." I said, "Sure." She's like, "Okay." Down she went. Now I can 12-step the guy. Be prepared for anything. And look at the list. I gave you a list of what to take along. D, take along booze. If you've never seen somebody go into DTs or seizures, it's a very unpleasant sight. People can detox themselves off of heroin and cocaine, usually without killing themselves. Alcohol, it's usually fatal. Somebody that's got an enlarged liver that's really hooked on booze, it will kill them to detox. Don't mess with it. I carry a bottle of booze because the guy starts acting a little bit wiggy, you give him a shot on the way to the detox, where they can load him up and with some depressants and bring that guy down over 48 hours. Then I'm obliged to go back and when he gets out of detox and pitch him the AA pitch, you know. Bring a big book, because the instructions are you're going to have two visits to the man. Your first visit, you're going to talk to him, make sure that he's willing. You're convinced he's alcoholic. Wait a minute. I have to be convinced he's alcoholic. Yes. Then he may want to start right away. Uh-uh. Give him the book, let him read the book if he's well enough to read. If he's not, get him to a hospital, get him to a detox, get him detoxed, and then make your second visit to the man, right? I bring a meeting book just to leave for him and the wife, and I've now taken the Al-Anon meetings out of our our AA meeting books down in New Jersey. So I leave an Al-Anon meeting book with the guy's wife if she shows any interest at all in helping herself, or maybe the kids. You want to go to Alateen. Water. Water, wet wipes, you know, a lot of times guys are going to puke, and you need to be able to clean it up, you know. And with the things going around today, I do not clean the stuff up with my bare hands. So latex gloves, I forgot to put it down here, but I carry latex gloves with me. Because I learned that from the military, it's a pathogen. They put it in one of those little special bags. When somebody throws up on a military airplane, they do not clean up even vomit, because you can catch stuff from people's body fluids. Plastic bags. If a guy's going to hurl, give him a big 40-gallon garbage can. Maybe he'll hit the target. You hope, right? One of my most fond memories is doing 12-step call with my buddy Tommy, and Tommy's going, and I forgot the plastic bags. He's going, "Dave, fall over," and I'm in my brand-new Ford Explorer, you know? And I'm like, "Whoa," I just yanked the car over to the side of the road, and he just got the door open, and the guy's sitting there barfing, and the cops come driving by, you know? And the cop in the town, he pulled me over coming back from an AA meeting. I was speeding on one of the nights of a holiday. And he pulled me over and he says, "You know, do you know why I pulled you over?" And he said, "You know, I was like speeding." And he goes, "Well, no, this is really a sobriety check, you know." Then I handed him my big book, you know. And he started to laugh. And his brother's in recovery. So we had a little meeting there on the side of the road. So the guy knows me, you know. And so here comes this sheriff driving past me. And I got a guy barfing out the car. And he kind of looks real slow. And then he sees who it is. And he just waves. He starts laughing. You know,
keep up the good work.
Yeah. So, wipes and paper towels, candy, booze is loaded with sugar. You know, it'll help. If the guy's chirping like a squirrel, give him a piece of hard candy. Do not give him big pieces of hard candy. Alcohol, I'm serious. Alcohol can affect the throat. It swells up. You get like varicose veins in the throat. A lot of times it will burst and the guy will die. A lot of times the throat can't handle a big piece of candy. But give him something not sugar-free. The purpose of the candy is for sugar to help get him to rehab or to detox, not rehab. Orange juice and grapefruit juice. A lot of times the guy he's not ready to leave the house yet. All right? He's tripping like a squirrel and he wants something to drink. You do not want to hand him a tumbler full of booze. You're wasting your time at that point. Give him a tumbler full of orange juice or grapefruit juice. Load it with honey. It's a pure sugar. You digest it just like alcohol right through the skin. It doesn't have to be digested. It goes right through the tongue into his bloodstream. It'll elevate him so you can talk to the guy so he doesn't go into DTs right in front of you. One of the things that I learned from the old timers that you probably don't ever hear about, buy yourself a can of sauerkraut. Believe it or not, you drain off the juice into a glass and load it with honey. Do not tell them what it is. They will not drink it. Nobody wants to drink it.
If you tell them what it is, if you haven't witnessed projectile vomiting before, you will then.
And that's the exact reason you give it to them. When guys have the heaves, and especially the dry heaves, they can't keep anything down. I don't know what it is. There's something, and I'm not a chemist, but there's something about the grapefruit juice, the sauerkraut juice loaded with honey that they can get it down and keep it down. It'll stop them from puking long enough that you can talk to them. All right?
It's Dr. Bob's remedy.
Yeah, and it's got some vitamins in there. They used to give Carol syrup, castor oil, and, stewed tomatoes and sauerkraut, It's like, and formaldehyde.
The formaldehyde, you'd wake up Thursday.
Yeah, the formaldehyde. You talk to Dr. Bob's daughter, and she's like, yeah, I can always tell how Dad was doing a 12-step haul. You could smell it before you entered the house. You'd smell the formaldehyde, Those are some of the things that you need to bring with you. Now, there's two calls. Do you want to talk about the first call?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'll do the second.
There's a whole bunch of instructions here, and I don't want to take the time to do it because we're basically out of time as it is now. We're going to go a little bit over. You sit down with this guy. First of all, I want to find out whether this guy's an alcoholic. So first question I ask sounds kind of obvious. What makes you think you're an alcoholic? Now, a lot of the 12-step calls you will get will not be the old-fashioned 12-step call where the guy will call you on the telephone. A lot of times, it's a 12-step call in an AA meeting. You watch them, the newcomers, you can tell. You can pick them out at 100 yards. That guy's new. That woman's new. Well, how do you tell? The old-timers all walk away and want to talk to their friends. Nobody wants to talk to the newcomer, at least before I get sober. Not that I judge.
No.
I think I need to write some more inventory. So you make a beeline for him. Do not make a beeline for this person and then say, oh, here's my number if you want to help, call me. How did our program get founded? Roland Hazard and Sebra R. sought out Ebbie Thatcher in court from the judge. They went looking for him, plucked him out. Ebbie Thatcher sought out Bill Wilson, said, hey, man, I'm coming to see you. Bill Wilson sought out Dr. Bob. They didn't walk up and say, here's my phone number, if you want to help, call me sometime. That's a death warrant for an alcoholic. We will die before we pick up the telephone in most cases. Most alcoholics, it takes every fiber of their being and every beating administered by alcohol to get into an AA meeting, to have the courage to walk through the door. Don't make them try to pick up a 1,000-pound telephone to call you. Get their phone number from them and call them, as well as give your number to them if by some miracle they feel like calling you sometime. I give them a big book and I have them write it right inside the cover. When I get somebody's phone number, I write it inside the cover of my big book. I might lose a business card or a scrap of paper. I don't think I will lose my big book. If you look inside the covers of my big books, there's just numbers after numbers after numbers. And it goes on my nightly review, I make the note. Tomorrow my plan for the day is to call Joe Blow. I met him last night. It goes on that piece of paper, so the next day I call that guy. Am I responsible? I am responsible to call him. Right? Some questions. Say, hey, you new? It's like, all of a sudden his eyes get real big, and I have this guy figure, I'm new. Well, yeah, it's my first meeting. Okay, what makes you think you're an alcoholic? Well, I smashed my car. I got a DWI. Well, I didn't smash my car, I didn't get a DWI. That didn't make me alcoholic. Well, I went to prison. Well, a lot of people go to prison that aren't alcoholic. So tell me a little bit about your drinking. Let me make sure that you're in the right place. And the guy says, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, what happens when you drink? Can you put it down? well, no. And I said, you mean when you're drinking your first one, you want a second one? And he's like, well, yeah. Go, oh, that's physical craving. That's part of the deal. So when you put it down, if you do put it down, are you always thinking about where you're going to get your next one and how you're going to get the money and where's the new closest liquor store and are you going to have a stockpile on Saturday because the liquor store is closed on Sunday? Well, yeah. Well, there's a mental obsession. I said, how's your life? Your wife mad at you? Your kid talking to you? You got a job? Well, no. I'm like, okay, there's a spiritual malady. This guy's alcoholic. He's got all three pieces. I can work with him. Now, I am convinced he's alcoholic. I sit down. I talk to the guy. If he's in an AA meeting, I'll say, why don't you sit through the AA meeting? You don't expect to understand anything, and we'll go out and talk afterwards. I grab another drunk, because you always go on 12-step calls in pairs. If I'm going to be the 12-stepper, I let the other guy know, you are the safety. We go someplace where we can talk quietly. I sit down with the guy. What does How It Works say? If you want what we have. How does he know what I have? I got to tell him. Remember that paragraph I talked about early on? I have to give him enough of my story that he knows that I am like him. I'm convinced he's alcoholic. He has to be convinced I know the deal. I give him a little bit of my story until I see him nodding his head. Once I know I got him and he knows that I know what I'm talking about, then I tell him what I have. If you want what I have, I use that exact term straight from How It Works because he's probably just heard it in the AA meeting. If you want what I have, and here's what I have. I have step one. I know that I'm powerless. I did in the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. I don't really emphasize the spiritual because he probably can't handle it, but I talk about a manageability. He knows what that means, the problems that you have in your life. I talk about step two, that I need power. I need somebody to help me. I don't talk about a power greater than myself because I don't want to scare the guy away, unless he asks. If I get an indication that he wants to talk about spirituality, I'll give him a little bit. I take him through step three. I said, you know, this program is about getting power. We'll show you how to do that. And then we go through a series of things. And you probably don't know, won't understand what I'm talking about, but one of the things we do is we take a look at what we've been doing ourselves. We do an inventory, it's called. And I can show you how to do it. Piece of cake. Don't worry about it. But I let him know there's an inventory involved. I let him know that he's going to have to talk to me about it. All right? He's going to have to talk to somebody to get this stuff off his chest because you can't carry that kind of guilt around. I let him know there's going to be a fifth step involved. I let him know that the power is going to help you get rid of these character defects. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to do the work because if you could have done it, you would have done it yourself already. I tell him about the amends process. I'm not going to lie to the guy walking in the front door just to get him into an AA meeting. I let him know, hey, you know, part of this process, don't worry about it now, but eventually you're going to have to make amends. That's not saying I'm sorry. It means like, you know, if you smashed a car, you're going to have to replace the car. If you owe money, you're going to have to pay the money back, you know. If the guy goes, pay the money back, and he books. He hasn't had a beating administered by alcohol enough so that he is entirely ready. Remember the presence of God. He decides who gets this program and who doesn't, not me. I just show him, I lay out the kit of spiritual tools. He has to want what I have. I can't emphasize that enough. Don't worry about it. He'll be back if he's supposed to be back, you know. I lay it out, boom, 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 and I say, you know what? I talk to him about the 12-step call. Because a lot of times they're very wary. Why does this guy, what's in it for him? I let him know that by me carrying the message to him, it's keeping me sober. It's helping me. It's part of what I have to do because I was just like him. I have to carry the message because it's for me. And then he thinks he's helping me. All right. I said, great. Read the book. I get his number. I give him my number. I send him home. I call him the next day, and now we're on call number two. You're on, buddy.
Call number two. On the second visit, remember that you've given the person a big book, and you've asked them to read it usually. Ask them, have you read the book? I mean, that will give you a key to their willingness right there, whether they've read the book or not. Tell them what you have and briefly require what the steps require. A lot of times I'll explain the process in a very, very simple way of how to recover from alcoholism. I won't get really in-depth with the steps, but I'll basically give them an overview of what process you have to participate in for the personality change so that you're not going to continue to drink alcohol. And here are some instructions that we have down here.
Page 23.
Page 23, about halfway down. He has to have read the volume. He's prepared to go through with the 12 steps. You do ask the person, you know, are you willing? Are you willing to do what we have done to get what we have? If they're not willing, maybe you need to go back and explain more about the first step. Maybe they don't really understand anything about powerlessness. You know, go back to the chapter on alcoholism, more about alcoholism, or go back to the doctor's opinion or whatever. Let him know that you're available if he wishes to make a decision, step three, and to tell his story, step five, but do not insist upon it. Tell him that you'll be there, and if he's willing to go through this process, you'll do anything to help. I mean, you'll be there for him. If you want to use me as your sponsor, if you want to use me as a guide through the steps, I'm certainly willing to be there and help you. If the alcoholic does not respond, you should continue to be friendly with the family. And I do that today. I used to kind of like dodge the family, you know. But today, I really do. I was on a 12-step call not long ago where the husband of the family was really, he was a real drunk. And he was also, he loved to build fires. So he had like three fireplaces in his house, and he just loaded them up with wood, and he forgot to open the flues, and he passed out. I mean, the fire company came, this whole house stunk, like you wouldn't believe when we were in there on the 12-step call. And the wife was coming up to me going, should I divorce this guy? Should I divorce this guy? I'm like, I can't, you know, I'm not going to advise anything like that. That's a decision that you really need to come up with yourself. But the thing that we can do today that we really couldn't when the big book was written is we can refer these people to Al-Anon. We can make a pitch for Al-Anon. And in my pocket filled with numbers of people I know I can count on for 12-step calls, there's a bunch of Al-Anon numbers also. And there's even been 12-step calls where we've brought the Al-Anon members to talk with the family. So we're upstairs with the alcoholic, and the Al-Anon is downstairs with the non-alcoholic. And this really seems to work out well. The family should be offered your way of life. And that's really how I believe we do it today. We offer the family the way of life of, you know, you why don't you call Al-Anon? Well, I'm not the one with the problem! Al-Anon will give you some real tools how to handle your alcoholic better, you know? And you give them some kind of pitch like that because you're not going to be convincing them real quick that they have a problem. So anyway, I'll use whatever tools I can to get them to make the call because it's almost the death knell of a drinking alcoholic to have a spouse in Al-Anon. I mean, have you ever noticed that? The spouse goes off to Al-Anon. It's a matter of time before the house of cards comes down on that alcoholic. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of time. So it's a very, very positive thing to do to the for the family members if you can at all help with the pitch, you know, and then turn it over to qualified Al-Anons. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent on people. A lot of times you'll get an alcoholic like, you know, if I do this AA thing, will my family come back? And, you know, hey, pal, I don't know. All I know is I was drinking just like you. I felt just like you. I identify with where you're at. And you know what? I'm not like that anymore. I'm not there anymore. And one of the reasons why I'm here is so that I remember to not go back to where you are. You know what I mean? And I will help in whatever way as long as you're willing. Take care not to participate in the quarrels in the house. Like I said earlier, you know, should I divorce him? I'm not participating in that quarrel. I'm not qualified. I've been here 4 minutes, you know, and I'm going to make a decision whether you should stay with your husband. I'm not going to do that. Be careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. If you can drink and not have repercussions and you're enjoying it, God bless you. We don't get a toaster for signing you up here. You know what I mean? There's no membership drives that we're pushing. We are here if you need and want us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sorry that we ran out of time. We went a few minutes over. For those of you that are interested in the St. Augustine's Prayer Book, there's a phone number here. This is a number. You're going to get a message. You can call it and ask to talk to the bookshop. And you set up the arrangements to buy it. It runs like 15 bucks or something. It's area code 914-384-6660. And I'll have that up here if you didn't quite catch it. It's up here on 914-384-6660.
Can I give you a web address?
Yeah. There's some promises that we didn't cover. They're called the other promises. My brother sent me these from California. You may have heard of them. I kind of like them. It says, if we are casual with this phase of our development, we will be drunk before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new imprisonment and a new misery. We will relive the past and won't be able to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word conflict and will know pain. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will sink even lower. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will deepen. We will gain interest in selfish things and lose interest in our fellows. Self-esteem will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will suck. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will multiply. We will intuitively know how to run from situations which never used to bother us. And number 12, we will suddenly realize that God would never have done to us what we are doing to ourselves. On page 24, there's the Declaration of Unity. A lot of people have never heard of it or seen it. It says, this we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA's unity depend our lives and the lives of those to come. Don't use this stuff as a weapon to beat up on anybody. Use this stuff as a tool for your own spiritual toolbox for you to get better. Lead by example. Be the best walking big book anybody has ever seen, and they will be attracted to you like a moth to a flame. Right? At the International Convention up in Seattle, there was a guy there, an old-timer, got sponsored by Bill, and he read a poem, and he talked about some connection, and I don't remember what the connection was, but it went back to the founders, and it's called Show the Way, and I gave you a copy of it. I'd like to read that before Chris and I close. It says, I would rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. I would rather one walk with me than merely tell the way. For the eye is a better pupil, more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example is always clear. I can soon learn to do it if you let me see it done. I can watch your hands in action, but your tongue too fast may run. For the best of all the preachers are the men who live their creed. For seeing good in action is what everybody needs. I may misunderstand you in the high advice you give, but there is no misunderstanding in how you act and how you live. You have been drinking from a fire hydrant. We've been throwing this stuff at you. You have a 28-page guide. You got 3 pages of consideration questions. Combined, if you buy a set of the tapes, you will have a spiritual toolkit to go back and have your own experience. Get together with some friends, go through this stuff again in your own time, at your own speed, at your own pace, and I guarantee you, you will be changed. You will have the best thing in the world will come to you. Promises that you could never have imagined. You know, there's an Al-Anon expression, and I love it. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Start at the beginning. Start at step one. Go through the stuff again. If it's your 50th time, make it 51. If it's your first, let's get going tonight. Do not let your ego rebuild and get you back to drinking. I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to be here. It was a grace of God to allow me to be up here in front of you. My email address is aadave1, the numeric one, @AOL.com. If you want to get in touch with me, you can go ahead and do that. I have an old website, which is a Big Book Workshop on the website. It's bigbookworkshop.com. If you want to look at it, I have not done any of the work on it in a while. That'll probably be updated in a year or so. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'm going to turn it over to Chris and let him say some closing remarks. And I guess Ozzy's got some remarks, and then I'll take us out of here in a prayer.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for being here. I especially want to say thanks to Bonnie and Ozzy for having us up here. And thanks, John and Jane, from Glen Kay for being here. Come on up, Ozzy.
Bonnie, welcome up.
And I just want to thank both of you. It's been an absolutely tremendous seminar. And in fact, I was overwhelmed. I didn't hear all of it. I was lucky. I heard more comments about it. I think I got it all. from people going over, and I never saw a seminar like this where they came out and talked and just so excited. And I'm really more than happy with it, and I wish I had this opportunity. The ones from Serenity House that are here to go through this at the time, early in sobriety, and I think it's wonderful. I also want to thank the staff here. We're all volunteers and in the spirit of the program and to put it together. And we have people come from quite a distance for seminars just to help out and give of themselves. Bonnie?
Hi. I just want to say thank you too to Chris and Dave. And I heard little bits and pieces of it in between my work, but as Ozzie could tell you, what I did here, I've been so excited about. I've been after him and asking him all the questions on that first few sheets. And I want to thank everybody for being here, for making it such a pleasant weekend for all of our staff, too. It was just, we could just feel the friendship and the love in the air this weekend, and it was wonderful here. Thanks to all the people who came, the local people who came to help us, too. And we're hoping that these presenters will come back next year, hopefully in February. And if you really like this, and I'm sure we heard many of you loved it, spread the word, because this is something that can't hurt anyone. I know it's going to help us tremendously. The staff here is going to take the tapes and go through them ourselves. And we're looking forward to that, too. Thank you so much.
And just another thing. Remember, when you go back home and you start talking about it, the old-timers are going to hate you. That I can guarantee. It's happened to me, especially up here. And just in part of the closing, what I love is the Serenity Prayer, but the full Serenity Prayer. And we have some up there, anyone interested. And God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did the sinful world as it is and not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy in the life to come. And can we make a circle and close in the usual manner? And Jane, before the Lord's Prayer, will lead us in amazing grace. Thank you.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace the precious did, that grace appear. The hour I first believed, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we'd first begun. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you all. I'd like to do one more thing before we go. Just because of my experience of doing these workshops, if we could just get quiet for one more second. Like everything we've done so far, we've asked God to take us into a place that's it's precious, it's special, it's the place we do inventory from. So I'd like to get quiet for just a second. I'll say a very quick prayer, and then we'll leave. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this chance to experience your grace and to have a new knowledge of your presence in our lives. We ask now that you take us out from this place and keep us safe and protected. Help us to have a new strength and fervor to go out and try these steps and have a new experience with them. And as we go out from here, keep us ever mindful of the place and the connection we need to keep us safe and protected from drinking again. And that our power comes from you through our faith in you 24 hours at a time. In your name, Father, amen.
Thank you all. Let's go.